Lance Tarchione, technical agronomist with the Calvin Asgrove, here with a special live from the field episode of Ag Talk. Not actually live when you're listening, but I'm live in the field when I'm recording this. So I apologize for the background noise. I'm actually in the combine harvesting corn right now. So that that low hum you hear in the background is what my combine sounds like when it's operating properly and it's not broke down. There's the buzzer telling me the grain tank is 3/4 full. Grain cart will be here to catch me before I get full, and the combine can keep on rolling. All this grain is being bagged in the field, so that's putting grain inside of a big plastic tube, basically. And it's temporary storage for those of us poor farmers who don't have a bunch of grain bins, but didn't really want to take the price that was being offered this fall for grain. You can get a better price delivering in December or January because of what they call basis. We won't get into that. We'll let Jim Anderson cover the ins and outs of grain marketing, but anyway, we're gonna get a better price for the crop, more than enough to offset the cost of putting it in the bag, and it also helps harvest logistics. So basically, you can put it in a bag about as fast as you can harvest it. So it's reduces the amount of labor involved during harvest, reduces your need to get trucks during harvest, and harvest is the worst time to get semi-trucks because there's just not enough of them around for that to meet the demand that time of year. And on our operation, putting grain in a bag at harvest time is something that has multiple benefits. And one of these years, we'll have a wet fall, wet winter, deep snow, deep mud, when I'm supposed to be getting that grain out of the bag, out of the field, and that'll be a nightmare. And maybe I'll change my tune on how much I like bagging grain. But anyway, harvest is off to a slow start on our farm, which is not uncommon. We officially started last Saturday, so a week ago today, and we've had several setbacks, several breakdowns, several days with shortage of labor, and have not gotten near as much done in a week as ideally you would. But things are going good at the moment, and so I'm thankful for that. I was talking to my dad yesterday. He asked how things were going with harvest, and told him some of the challenges we've been having. And he, my dad retired from farming pretty young. Actually, he was I don't know, about 60 probably when he decided he didn't want to farm for a living anymore. And he didn't like the way, you know, agriculture was headed, you know, becoming a big business, and everything was getting so expensive, and farmers competing against each other for land, and just it had changed a lot from when he started farming in the late 60s, and not for the better in his opinion. And so he was ready to walk away from it when he was, you know, pretty young, and has never missed it. Misses his cows every now and then, but he does not miss farming really at all. And every time I tell him, you know, how much something costs, or a breakdown we had, or a setback we had, or an expensive repair we had, he always thanks me for reminding him that he does not miss it. So the field we're harvesting in today actually is not mine. This is some of my brother-in-law's crop. It's not a farm that he owns. This is in the Roseville area. This is some rented land. This is what they call prime grade A farmland here. This is This is something that anybody would be proud to own, and I'm not fortunate enough to own anything like this, or even be related to anybody who owns anything like this. This is the perfect 160. So 160 acres, a perfect 160 is perfectly square. So this field is 1/2 mile long, 1/2 mile wide. You can see every spot of this farm from wherever you stand on it, because it's about as flat as a table. There are no trees anywhere on this farm. There are no buildings anywhere on this farm. There is no waterway anywhere on this farm. It is 100% grade A tillable farmland. If you wanted to buy this farm today, take about $3 million to buy this piece of ground. Probably was bought for tens of thousands of dollars back in the day when the family that owned it bought it. And kind of crazy what it costs to buy farmland these days, or farm equipment. If you don't grow up on a farm, or part of a farming family, or have, you know, someone, either you're independently wealthy, or you are being helped by someone who's independently wealthy, you don't just start farming these days. Now, you can rent ground, but that's hard to do. You know, you don't have to buy brand new equipment. You can buy used equipment. You know, the combine that I'm in here today is, by my standards, a nice combine, and it's already 25 years old. So it is by no means new, but it gets the job done most days. There are ways that you can farm without owning your own equipment. You can hire people to do some of the field work for you. You can lease, you can rent sometimes, you can buy used. So, you know, not every farmer has to go out and buy a brand new $1 million combine. But, you know, if you wanted to buy equipment and buy land and just start farming, you would need to have a few million dollars in the bank to get started with. And so the barriers to entry in farming are pretty steep. And, you know, as a kid that grew up on a small struggling farm with a dad who was not going to be able to afford to help me get started in any way, I didn't start out as a farmer. I went to college. I got started my career as an agronomist, and, you know, all I ever wanted to do was farm. I didn't really want to be an agronomist when I was a kid. I wanted to be a farmer, and that was not an option for me. And so I thought, well, what can I do that keeps me close to farming, that's kind of like farming, but yet, you know, make good money, and maybe if I'm smart with my money and save my money and make some good business decisions, maybe someday I'll be able to afford to start farming. And that's exactly how it worked out for me. It was a little bit of good luck and good timing, because when I was first able to start buying land in the 1990s, land was pretty cheap. Didn't seem like it at the time. My dad thought I was absolutely bat you know what crazy when I bought my first farm for $1,650 an acre, I believe it was. And it was a rougher farm, wasn't all tillable, had some non-tillable ground on it. And, you know, he didn't think there was any way I'd ever be able to pay for that. Just thought it was a real bonehead move to spend the money that I had saved up to buy that first farm, or I didn't have money saved up to buy it, but I had enough money saved up to make a good down payment on it. And so the amount that I financed actually would cash flow, and you didn't pay attention to the fact that you had to have cash to put down on it, so it would make it look like it was a profitable decision. But if you were able to buy land back in those days and hang on to it, that's been really good, because land has appreciated dramatically over the last 30 years, and, you know, it hasn't really changed in price a lot in recent years. It rose up to record prices and then just kind of plateaued and has kind of stayed at that high level, bounces around a little bit. But if you were fortunate enough, lucky enough, some people might say smart enough, but I honestly don't think people had any idea when they were buying land for $2,000 an acre that it would someday be worth $15,000 or $20,000 an acre. But that's kind of the way it goes. I mean, they aren't making any more land anymore. There's less farmland in the country every year with developments and highways and solar farms and things that take good production or good productive land out of production. I have a bit of a problem with that kind of stuff myself. I think we ought to quit losing farmland, because one of these days we may realize we don't have enough anymore. But anyway, hopefully, those of you that are getting out this weekend on the scenic drive, dress cool. It's going to be a hot one. It's 90 out there today. It's typically does not feel like corn harvesting weather. This feels more like wheat harvest weather, and certainly going to be a warm, sunny one for the first weekend of the scenic drive. Which, if you grew up in the London Mills area like I did, you're intimately familiar with what it's like to try to harvest during the scenic drive. And basically, you really can't. You can't even hardly drive a car on some of the rural roads, get through some of these small towns that are busy with scenic drive activity, let alone a tractor or combine or a grain truck or something that takes a lot of room. So we always have to plan these weekends to be working someplace where we don't have to fight the traffic. And that's another nice thing about these grain bags that I was talking about, putting grain in the bag in the field. You don't have to get out of the field. Everything you do is right there in the field until you have to move to the next one. So still harvesting. Thought maybe I'd share a little bit about what it's like operating a combine these days. So as I mentioned, this is a 25-year-old machine. So this is not a new combine by any means. It's got about 3,729 engine hours on it right now, and about 2,600 separator hours. So you farmers out there would know that that's kind of a moderately high-hour combine. Not by my standards, but by some people's standards it would be. But a lot of life left in this machine if you maintain it and are willing to put some money in it and make some repairs. And nothing that can't be fixed, just a matter of how much effort and work and money you want to put into it. This machine is new enough. It's got a very nice cab, so farming still, more manual labor than some ways of making a living, but it's nothing like it used to be. It's pretty comfortable out here, 90 degrees, but it's about 70 in this air-conditioned cab. Pretty quiet, as you can tell. We're having a normal conversation here. You can tell there's kind of a noise in the background, but you could talk to somebody sitting beside you in here. If you had the radio on, you don't have to have it cranked up loud to be able to enjoy your music. And sitting here in a comfortable seat. Some of the newer machines actually have refrigerators in them. I don't know if I'll ever own a combine with a refrigerator in it or not, but I know some people who have some cold beverages, on hand while they're running the combine. So that would be pretty sweet. I would need a cooler with ice to do that in my combine, which wouldn't be that hard to do, but I just drink lukewarm bottled water myself because I'm too lazy to have a cooler with ice. But anyway, it's modern equipment is pretty nice to operate. very efficient. Get a lot done when you're not broke down. Most farmers actually enjoy operating equipment. I have a colleague of mine who has a little boy that's 1 year old, and she has already noticed that he loves being in trucks, tractors, combines, bulldozers. I said, "Yep, girls on equipment. That's what guys like." So she's already noticing that her son has a thing for farm equipment, and that's something that never goes away. Farmers love equipment, and we spend a lot of time in it, spend a lot of money on it, but it's something that comes with the trade. So anyway, speaking of equipment, everybody be safe. We've had a couple combine fires in the area already this harvest, and man, these weather conditions are just anything catches on fire, it's gonna go. You'll probably never get it stopped before it does a lot of damage. And you know, if you've ever seen what's left of a combine after it burns, you might be shocked how little there is left. I mean, combines are big machines, but if you think about it, you know, I'm hauling about 300 gallon of diesel fuel right now, probably between engine oil and hydraulic oil, I don't know, 50 gallon, maybe more than that, 50, 60, 70 gallon of oil, lots of rubber tires. The shell of any machine that's 30 years old or less is actually plastic. So you might not know that, but the main, you know, when you look at what you can see of a combine, most of that's fiberglass and plastic. And then there's a lot of wiring, a lot of rubber hoses. You know, there's just, you might be surprised how many combustible things there are on a combine. And when you get that rubber, fuel, and oil burning, a lot of BTUs there, and a lot of the sheet metal that's actually relatively thin will actually melt just because of the intensity of the heat. So you got an axle, a couple axles, a couple wheels, and maybe a few pieces of frame is about all that survives a combine fire, because everything else is either combustible or thin enough metal that it gets so hot that it just literally melts and disintegrates. So hopefully not something that too many of us are going to have to experience this harvest season. And when it happens, please don't make matters worse by getting hurt. Better to lose your combine than it is to lose your life or severely injure yourself trying to put out a fire or get a head unhooked before it burns up or any of those kind of things. So everybody stay safe, and hopefully the field noise here hasn't been too irritating or distracting for you. And maybe next week we'll be back in the confines of my studio office when we record next week's program. So everybody stay safe, take care, talk to you soon.